This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:17. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to a story about the Independent Investigative Mechanism for Myanmar, and they say that they've collected more than 1.5 million pieces of evidence showing that there have been systematic attacks on civilians that amount to crimes against humanity. So we're finding out more about the investigations and how that evidence will be used to hold perpetrators accountable.
So this mechanism was established by the UN Human Rights Council, and it actually started its operations in 2019. It has, of course, continued after the military coup this year. And recently, they said that it's collected more than 1.5 million pieces of evidence that show that there have been systematic attacks, like you said, on civilians. And I think it's important to say that this evidence includes a variety of things, so photographs, videos, testimonies, social media posts, and the like. And that's really, I think, sobering. But the other thing is also trying to understand how exactly it's going to be used, right? That's the next stage of it.
I think it's particularly important to learn and discuss this now because, as we know, the military takeover of Myanmar happened on the 1st of February this year. That's been nearly 9 months, more than 9 months, actually. And according to reports, although the military initially responded in a restrained manner towards protests and civil disobedience movements, it has increasingly become more violent and forceful, and more than 600 people have reportedly died. Thousands more have been injured. Many of them were young protesters. So it is quite, I think it's a timely point at which to look at this work and the importance that it plays in really holding people accountable for their actions. So we'd like to hear from you. Do share your thoughts with us. You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now joined by Nicholas Khumjian, who is head of the Independent Investigative Mechanism for Myanmar. Nicholas, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. So it's a pleasure to be with you.
So as I mentioned, it's been 9 months since the coup took place in February. What can you tell us about the current status of the Myanmar crisis?
Thank you so much. Let me just begin by cautioning that I'm not a political analyst or a human rights commentator. My role is to collect evidence of criminal activities in Myanmar and to prepare files that could hold the perpetrators to account. That said, of course, we've been following closely what's been happening since the coup in Myanmar, because there are indications that crimes against humanity, which would fall within our mandate, have been committed. We've seen the situation evolve over time, and the current situation is frankly horrible. Over 1,000 persons have been killed, well over 1,000 have been killed. There's increasing conflict with those opposed to the regime taking up arms. Assassinations are occurring. We still see thousands arrested without due process and being held. Particularly, we're concerned about the targeting of specific professions such as journalists and medical workers and also political opponents. And all those who are watching the situation have seen the terrible economic consequences for Myanmar that affect all its people, and in certain sectors, economic collapse. We've seen collapse in certain areas of the health sector and COVID being out of control. So this is a situation that doesn't only affect the people of Myanmar. Of course, they're suffering the most, but it also is putting a burden on neighboring states who are now facing refugee flows and increased prospects of even more fleeing the country, and all in the region, of course, suffer from the economic collapse.
So talk to us about the mandate of the Independent Investigative Mechanism for Myanmar, right? What crimes is it looking at?
Well, our mandate is to collect evidence of the most serious international crimes committed on the territory of Myanmar since 2011. And the most serious international crimes are defined as genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. We were set up in particular following the 2017 clearance operations in Rakhine State, where over 750,000 of Rohingya fled Myanmar. Most of them remain in camps in Bangladesh. In total, because there were earlier refugee flows, there's about 900,000 refugees in Bangladesh. Those from 2017 have been there already 4 years, and nothing is changing. They're living under very, very difficult conditions. And it seems that they were targeted particularly for their religious beliefs. When we talk to these people, they want to go home. 4 years is a long time. For many of the children, an eight-year-old child, it's half their life. They hardly remember their lives before their homes in Myanmar. So that's one of the reasons we were created, but our mandate goes on and continues to cover crimes that may be occurring now or could occur in the future. Crimes against humanity are defined as serious violations when they occur in the context of a widespread or systematic attack on a civilian population. And when we carefully looked at what has been happening since the coup, we saw after some period of time increased use of force around the country against protesters, similar use of lethal violence in different locations at the same time. And we saw this targeting of specific groups. So we believe that the preliminary evidence indicates that there is a widespread and systematic attack on a civilian population. So we're gathering that evidence. We're also concerned with the growing violence, what appears to be moving towards an armed conflict, and we'll be carefully following that evidence.
So speaking of that evidence, your investigations have resulted in more than 1.5 million pieces of evidence. Could you tell us more about those that have been gathered, what they reveal?
Well, a lot of that evidence came through after the coup, when we put out a call for those who had information about illegal orders being given to come forward and share information. So a lot of the evidence is communications we receive that include videos or photographs or testimonies of people about what they observed, what happened to them, what happened to their family. And some of them that are particularly important, we remain in contact with to gather further evidence. So I would like to say that a lot of this evidence comes from very brave and courageous people who put their own safety and even the safety of their families at risk because they want so much for there to be some accountability for these crimes. They want the world to know what is happening and what has happened to them. And they want to see those who are responsible held to account.
You referenced putting a call out. What has been the process of gathering and really organizing the evidence? Were there difficulties with it?
Well, it's very challenging. I've been involved in investigating war crimes at different international tribunals for the last 21 years. But things have changed from other earlier conflicts that I worked on. Now we see that at every crime scene, there's usually more than one person with a phone that's videotaping it. We see so many photographs. We didn't have the situation before that so many crimes were incited on social media or even documented on social media. Sometimes even perpetrators bragging about crimes on social media. So all this has created a whole new challenges. We have vast amounts of data, and it's an information technology challenge to really manage that, to identify it and to organize it in a way it can be properly analyzed and verified, because part of our mandate is to verify the information so that it will have weight if used in criminal prosecutions in the future.
So how will that happen exactly? How will this evidence be used to hold the military accountable?
Well, the evidence will be used to hold whoever is responsible for these serious crimes accountable, but it depends upon courts being able and willing to exercise jurisdiction. Our mandate is to share the evidence with national, regional, or international courts. And there isn't at the moment a regional court dealing with serious human rights or serious international crimes in Asia at the moment. Of course, someday there may be proceedings in Myanmar, but that's not something that we see happening in the near term, where there would be fair proceedings with the legitimate intent to hold those responsible to account. But we do have two proceedings ongoing that we are cooperating with. Both of these, however, are limited to dealing with the situation of the Rohingya Muslims and the events that led to their forced departure out of Myanmar. And that is the ongoing investigation at the International Criminal Court, which is exercising jurisdiction to look at what happened because these people fled into Bangladesh. And one of the elements of the crime of deportation is to cross an international border. The judges of the International Criminal Court have said the crime of deportation, therefore, was only completed when they entered the territory of Bangladesh, a party to the International Criminal Court. Therefore, the court could have jurisdiction, and they are investigating. And we're trying to cooperate closely with them and assist their efforts to find out the truth. There also is an ongoing proceeding at the International Court of Justice. This is the highest United Nations court that hears disputes between states. In this case, the Gambia, acting on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Countries, has brought the case to court alleging that Gambia, like Myanmar, is a signatory, and most countries in the world, has signed the Convention Against for the Prevention and Punishment of Genocide. And they say that Myanmar authorities have failed to live up to their responsibility to prevent and punish genocide in relation to what happened and is happening to the Rohingya. So that case is in fairly early stage of the proceedings at the International Court of Justice. We also are sharing evidence with the parties because we think it's important that the judges in that case have the best evidence so they can make a truly informed and correct decision about the truth of the allegations.
Nicholas, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Nicholas Komjian, head of the Independent Investigative Mechanism for Myanmar, speaking to us about their process and what they hope to do with the evidence that they've collected. Keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.